Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
City to discuss ending public arts funding program. The Odessa City Council has a lot on its plate during both its work session meeting at 3 p.m. Tuesday and its regular meeting at 6 p.m. Public art funding issues at Municipal Court and Floyd Gwynn Park and a possible default judgment are among the items to be discussed. During the council's regular meeting, City Council member Chris Haney wants to talk about killing a nearly four-year-old program that requires money be set aside for public art projects. Back in February 2020, the City Council agreed the city would begin to set aside 1% of certain capital improvement projects to pay for public art. However, Haney wants to discontinue the program because he believes art is a luxury, not a necessity, and funding the program comes at the expense of the basic needs of the city. Haney wants staff to transfer all unencumbered funds to the city's general fund. Randy Hamm, executive director of Odessa Arts, noted in an editorial for the Odessa American that capital cost can't be used to fund salaries and the benefits of public art far outweigh the costs. Examples of such artwork are located at the OPD training facility, Odessa Fire Rescue Stations number 9 and number 6, the Animal Control Facility on 42nd Street, and the Family Wellness Clinic on Lee Street. The cost of these projects combined, $215,000, or about $1.86 per person. Based on the 2020 census data about Odessa's total population, the most important things that public art achieves is a sense of pride in a community. How many times have Odessans complained about the appearance of our home? It's so brown, it's so flat, we need more color. By investing in public art, the city is working to improve the aesthetics of the region, making it a place people can be proud to live, work, and raise a family in, Hamm wrote. In addition, public art is important to the recruitment of businesses and employees, and it's good for tourism, Hamm said. Odessa's commitment to public art even prompted a film crew to come out earlier this year for Amazon Prime's The Story of Art in America documentary series, which will air early next year, Hamm said. Our city is a hub for people traveling from Pecos, Monahans, Big Spring, and Fort Stockton, just to name a few. Every one of those travelers is a tourist. While they may come for shopping or health appointments, having cultural amenities will encourage them to stay more than one day, eat one more meal, and spend one more dollar, adding to the economic benefit of art, Hamm wrote. Every year, the arts and culture sector adds $6 million in economic activities to Odessa, Hamm said. It's not the optional frosting on the cake of its city. It's the eggs, flour, and sugar, he wrote. Default judgment. During the council's earlier work session, which begins at 3 p.m., the city will discuss the fact the city apparently failed to have improvements at Slater Park inspected in March 2017, and is about to have a default judgment filed against it by the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation. According to documents provided to the council, the state sent the city a notice of alleged violation on December 13, 2020, and gave officials 20 days to accept the department's determination, reach a negotiated settlement for $1,500, or make a written request for a hearing. The city didn't do any of those things, and they were sent a certified letter on October 31, 2023. Informing officials a default order for $2,000 will be considered at 9 a.m. November 14th in Austin. On the very day the city was notified of the violation, the city council fired city attorney Natasha Brooks, and within a matter of days, three of her assistant city attorneys quit, leaving two attorneys in the office, including current city attorney Dan Jones. Max Reyes, Parks and Recreation Director, informed the City Council that if the city hires a registered accessibility specialist, the state will be willing to discuss the case with a prosecutor to see if the violation can be resolved without a fine. Other legal issues also on the work session agenda is a discussion of municipal court issues and possible solutions. No materials were provided to the council, but on October 24th, the City Council agreed to advertise the positions of Judge Carlos Rodriguez and Keith Kidd, whose terms are ending at the end of the month. In addition, Court Director Kimberly Joswiak turned in her resignation October 20th, followed by Court Supervisor Kashiva Smith on October 25th and Court Deputy Clerk Cindy Reyes Salgado on October 31st. Two other court employees have also recently quit, including Deputy Court Clerk Andrea Quirzos, who indicated she was tired of the politics within the city and her perception she was doing the work for more than one person, wasn't being fairly compensated, and would never be fairly compensated. In her registration letter, Quiroz wrote, "We have certain employees who feel because they are related to the mayor and can go to City Hall, to the city mayor's office to make allegations, they are untouchable. That is not something that sits right with me." LEO raises. The city will also discuss during the work session Odessa Police Chief Mike Gerke's suggestion that the city reallocate funds for vacant positions to cover raises for sworn officers within the department. According to an internal memo, Gerke said OPD currently has 46 vacant positions, which has led to increased workloads and longer response times. He also noted many officers at higher ranks with more experience are earning less than newer officers. Gerke believes the reallocation would make starting and lateral officers extremely competitive, reward loyalty, and improve morale without requiring the city to provide additional funding. The council will also discuss during its work session the possibility of donating the building at 5217 North Dixie Boulevard to the Girl Scouts of the Desert Southwest, which has been renting it since 1986. Floyd Gwynn. During the council's work session, council members are also scheduled to discuss the construction issues with Floyd Gwynn Park. The city signed a nearly $5 million contract with Onyx General Construction in April 2021 for upgrades. The 79-year-old park was the third park built in Odessa and was to receive a total of $8.5 million in upgrades. In September 2022, when Odessa Parks and Recreation Director Steve Patton said the park was 90% complete, he said contractors were working on the remaining 25% of the irrigation system and the last two sections of the lighted walking trail. Carports, another item on the work session agenda, the possibility of allowing homeowners to build carports next to their homes. Ector County MOU, during the session's council's regular session, the council is also expected to discuss a memorandum of understanding with Ector County that will allow them to share sales and use tax revenue generated by property that is to be annexed into the city limits. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett said it's important to come up with an agreement that allows the city and county to both continue to grow. Without one, the city will be landlocked within the current city limits, and that wouldn't be healthy for the county. I think we're very close. I think there's maybe a few different edits in there that the commissioners would like to see, and I think the city is good with it for now. But until both parties sign on to it, we still have a little bit of work to do, and it's a good step in the right direction, Fawcett said. The MOU under discussion states that all current properties that are in the Sales Assistance District that are collecting sales tax right now are going to remain untouched, as in the county will continue to collect them, Fawcett said. people in West Odessa, Gardendale, and Pleasant Farms are worried that that money is going to go away from the county collecting it and using it for the sheriff's department or for environmental enforcement or for their county road system. So we made sure we included that clause to protect that, Fawcett said. Auto parts. The council is also expected to consider whether the city should purchase nearly $389,000 worth of inventory from NAPA. According to documents provided to the council, the city decided to terminate its contract with NAPA Auto Parts in July after having been doing business with them since March 2012. Under the terms of the contract, existing inventory is supposed to be purchased by the city at the contractor's cost. The city would receive more than 20,500 pieces. People aren't thinking about us. How new ban on COVID-19 vaccine mandates impacts medically vulnerable Texans. A sweeping ban on COVID-19 vaccine requirements for all private businesses, including hospitals, is the latest blow to medically vulnerable Texans who rely on others' immunization to shield themselves from highly transmissible viruses. Tamer coronavirus variants and a soft vaccine booster rollout have contributed to a lessened sense of urgency about the virus. But the new measure, which Governor Greg Abbott signed into law on Friday, could risk the health of groups like organ transplant recipients, cancer patients, and those with underlying conditions as common as severe asthma. These risks led to some bipartisan dissent during original Senate discussions of the bill, especially from State Senators Boris Miles, Democrat Houston, and Kelly Hancock, Republican Fort Worth, who both take immunosuppressants for their respective kidney transplants. I live a pretty normal life and am not fearful, but it does make you think about others, Hancock said. There's just a balance we have to keep in mind. Just try to always think of others and the positions they may be in. For one, vaccines are less effective in some of these patients because their conditions prevent their bodies from manufacturing the white blood cells that can recognize and fight off viruses. But even with protection, the virus can exacerbate underlying conditions and lead to long-term symptoms of the virus, known as long COVID. Scientists and health experts agree that the vaccine is safe and effective for most people with functioning immune systems in reducing both transmission and severity of the virus. Everybody's going to be different, so it's not automatic that a compromised individual will end up in the hospital or in the ICU, said Dr. Jimmy Widmer, an internal medicine specialist. But what we do know throughout the past 3.5 years of COVID is that time and time again, study after study has shown that those who are immunocompromised are hospitalized at a higher rate. In the past, state lawmakers' efforts to stymie vaccine mandates have excluded hospitals and other medical facilities, partially because, under federal emergency rules, the U.S. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services required vaccinations among employees. The regulation was withdrawn over the summer, and since then, many facilities have differed on their rules. A vast majority of them did not even have a blanket mandate at that point, said Carrie Kroll, an advocacy leader for the Texas Hospital Association. We are very hopeful that the worst of the COVID pandemic is behind us, Kroll said. But we know with infectious disease, that may rule today, may not rule in 6 months, in terms of disease levels and what this disease morphs into. In the end, lawmakers included a provision that would allow hospitals to require unvaccinated employees to wear personal protective equipment, despite advocates fighting for a complete exclusion from the bill. Alice Barton, a retired infectious disease doctor living in Austin, said, "It's impossible to imagine this measure will be enforced." Barton, 70, has severe asthma and an autoimmune disease, and said she just received the triple vaccine for the flu, COVID, and RSV. "I'm the only person still who wears a mask to the doctor's office. I'm one of two people in my church who wear a mask," Barton said. "One becomes lonely. It's not just being physically isolated from other people. It's that other people aren't thinking about us anymore." Barton is one of many people worried that state lawmakers will continue further down the warpath against vaccine requirements onto other immunizations like those for polio or measles. But with the law now in place, advocates hope to transform the idea that people have to get the vaccine into an idea that they should to protect their peers. Chase Bearden, a leader at the Coalition of Texans and Disabilities, said, "Now that there's less external pressure on Texans to make this decision, he hopes they realize it's one they can make on their own accord. What can we all do on a personal level to keep everyone safe, especially those who may not have the great health that the rest of us do?" Bearden said. "There's so many family members that are going through cancer treatment or living with a chronic health condition, and yes, you're a healthy person. You don't think you need it, but if you get it, you easily can pass that on to the next person who takes it home." Stephanie Duke, an attorney who helps handle disaster management at Disability Rights Texas, said the state should be doing everything it can to promote public health, and that should include people with disabilities. "People go in to get health care, and you would expect your health care provider to be doing everything they can to make that safe," Duke said. Duke said government officials often forget to include disabled people in disaster preparedness, and the global pandemic was no different than a hurricane evacuation. "Several policies issued during the height of the public health emergency have hurt those who don't have functioning immune systems or have chronic illnesses. For instance, when the pandemic began, disabled people weren't a specific category included in the demographic data that states began collecting on the virus," she said. "Stuff is going to happen. Lights are going to go out. We're going to have viruses again. This is the world that we live in," Duke said. "But now we plan for it. So how we give people choices to promote their safety, autonomy, and independence after an event, and build that resilience." Nehem Bora is a 2023-24 New York Times Disability Reporting Fellow. Small plane crashes into car after overshooting runway during emergency landing near Dallas. A small plane overshot their runway while landing at a Texas airport over the weekend and struck a car driving along a nearby road, injuring one person, authorities said. Video shows the propeller plane smashed through a fence during an emergency landing in the Dallas suburb of McKinney on Saturday. It then bounced and skidded onto the road, losing a wheel and colliding with a silver sedan that was driving perpendicular to the single-engine plane's path. "I saw the airplane coming down the runway quickly. I knew that he wasn't going to have time to stop," Jack Schneider, a bystander who recorded footage of the crash on his phone, told WFAA Texas TV. "It was going too fast, the tires were smoking." Following the afternoon crash, medics evaluated both people in the plane and took the car's driver to the hospital with minor injuries, according to a statement with the McKinney Fire Department. The flight originated in Midland and had been attempting an emergency landing at the Arrow County Airport, the fire department said. The Aviation Administration is investigating the cause of the crash. Shakespeare Festival gets rolling at Globe. Actors from the Texas Shakespeare Festival are hitting the boards this week at the Globe Theater at Odessa College, performing for students and the public. Odessa Arts hosts the event, where members of the troupe perform for students from throughout the Permian Basin, from grade 3 through high school. Public performances are at 7 p.m. November 17th and 18th at the Globe, and tickets are available at odessashakespeare.org. Ash Evans is one of the cast members. This is her first year with the group. "This is my very first production with the festival. I have been auditioning since I was like 18, I believe, so you can imagine my excitement whenever they reached out to me with an offer," Evans said. Originally from San Angelo, Evans has been living in Corpus Christi the last few years, but she just recently moved to Fort Worth. She began performing in Shakespeare plays in high school. "We did the complete works of William Shakespeare Abridged. It was a three-person cast, so it was a lot of fun, and it was just like a spoof of a bunch of different Shakespeare plays put into one script," Evans said. "This year the cast is doing Romeo and Juliet and Shakespeare's Greatest Hits. Shakespeare's Greatest Hits include the more important scenes from different shows they haven't produced in a while and thread together with narration." The William Shakespeare Abridged production Evans was part of is very similar to that. "The cast plays multiple parts in the production. She'll play two roles in Romeo and Juliet, and in Shakespeare's Greatest Hits, she'll play a bunch of different characters." Evans said it's refreshing to jump from show to show and play different characters. Asked how she memorizes all those lines, Evans said the technique she uses is go line by line. "I find verse a lot easier to memorize because there's a pattern and a rhythm to it. So I'll just memorize the first line, then I'll go and memorize the second line and put them together until I get the entire script," Evans said. She added that she often runs lines with other actors just so she can have someone else to work with. "But at the very beginning of the process, I prefer to do it alone because I just like to get it done as quickly as possible," Evans said. "Performing in the replica of the Globe on the Odessa College campus is amazing," she said. "This is probably my favorite space I've ever been in. I always dreamed of being in the Globe, so even just being in a replica is enough for me. It is much fun, and there's so much to do on the stage. It's so much wider than I could have imagined," Evans said. She said she has wanted to be an actress since she was little. She would watch movies or TV and imagine what it would be like to be in a movie. "I found myself a little girl playing pretend in the backyard. I grew up in the country, so I had land to roam and use my imagination. When I was 12 years old, I had a group of friends that were auditioning for a local community theater show, Hairspray, and I decided that I was going to audition. I did, and it was very nerve-wracking. But years later, I'm still doing it," Evans said. She added that it's very intimidating the first time, and the nerves really get going. Never go away. "There's just a beauty in being anxious before the show. I think it means that I care enough to be here, and I care enough about impacting the audience in a positive way. But once I step onto stage and I say my first few lines, I'm good to go, and I'm fully immersed in what's going on," Evans said. She added that she loves performing for kids. "I think it's wonderful that we get to perform for such young an audience, many of whom have never seen a live theatrical production. I know the very first time I saw a play, I was in awe of what was going on around me, and it really stuck with me years later, so that's all I can hope to do is impact them or inspire them and maybe get them to do it," Evans said. Adam Coda plays Mercurio and Paris. "My favorite parts on the show are fighting. I get two fights, and in both of them I die, and I just get to take a quick little nap on stage. It's pretty nice," Coda said. The cast for Romeo and Juliet includes by William Shakespeare, adapted and directed by Matthew Simpson, William DePima Romeo, Ashlyn Evans, Lady Capulet, and Tybald, Chesney Jones, Benvolio Peter, Adam Cudo, Mercutio Paris. Eliza Pagel, Juliet, Alice Wilkinson, Nurse, Sister Lawrence Prince. The cast of Shakespeare's greatest hits includes, adapted by William Matthew Simpson, directed by Jason Richards, Nicholas Di Puma, Orlando Baptista, Romeo Lysander, Ashlyn Evans, Le Beau, Catherine Hermia, Adam Coda, Charles Petruccio, Demetrius, Eliza Pagel, Celia, Violet, Juliet, Alice Wilkinson, Rosalind, Olivia, Helena, Chesney Jones, musician.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.